Excellent. Good evening, everyone. This is a graveyard shift here for sessions. Hope you're all excited. Who's excited? Yes. I have come with as much energy as I could muster after 9 hours. How long have you guys been here? 9 hours? It's been crazy. Great day. We're going to end, hopefully, with a fantastic session. I'm going to think it's fantastic, regardless of what you think. And I'm looking forward to being able to walk through some really cool stuff. Now, I've got about 60 minutes, and I've got about 4 hours of content. So we're going to move a little bit quickly, a lot of announcements, a bunch of demos, and actually a special guest partner that's going to join us on stage. So should be a lot of fun. Let's get going. All about new features and roadmap for compute. I'm going to save a lot of the this is how compute works for another session. This is mostly focused on new stuff and directional stuff. So just in case you were wondering sort of how does VMs work and how to disk work, I'm not going to spend any time on that. So I'm sorry if that's what you were looking for. Now, to start off, one of the things that's worth kind of touching on is as we look at the changes that are happening in the compute stack and everything up and down from PaaS down to VMs, it really is pretty amazing for a lot of us who grew up with computers, who grew up coding on some of the earliest computers that we had out there. And so, let's see here. Oh, there we go. Whoops. We missed the joke. Okay, now we're going to do it again. Here we go. Growing up with computers, being able to code against this, and being able to code this in Apple IIe and developing an application against this. Unfortunately, this is actually my brother. My parents didn't have a picture of me doing any work, apparently, when I was younger. And instead, I was busy doing this, apparently. And so this was me as Mario, and my brother was away coding. So I work now on this, and my brother works at Google. So maybe there's something there, I don't know. But I'm pretty happy about what I'm doing. So let's talk a little bit about how we're going to structure this 60 minutes. So first, infrastructure. This is going to be the core part, the beginning section. I'm going to talk to you about all of the capabilities built around virtual machines, some of the new sizes that we have coming down the pipeline, and some of the cool new capabilities around virtual machines that you can build services at the lowest level. Then I'm going to spend some time on containers, talk a little bit more about Service Fabric like you heard this morning, show some things on Kubernetes as well, and talk a little bit about some of the partner solutions in this area too. And then I'm going to end with platform, going up at the highest level, talking about really where you can deal with a great amount of application control without dealing with any of that infrastructure stuff that I spent the beginning part on. And so I'm going to try and cover all these and spend details on each one, going into different services and different capabilities in each. So first, let's start with some infrastructure. So first, when you look at infrastructure, one of the biggest things we focus on as offering capabilities is around driving efficiency. Efficiency and agility is really a primary aspect of what we think of infrastructure as a service to bring value to you. And so when you think of building on IaaS and putting services and solutions, it's how do you get efficient, how do you get agile, how do you spin things up quickly? And that agility is not just spinning VMs up quickly. It's also agile new hardware offerings. How do you get to try new hardware out? How do you get to play with some things without necessarily building out an entire cluster of these new GPU SKUs or additional large SSD-based hardware? And so this is where I'm really excited to be able to talk to you about some of the SKUs that we have in the pipeline. So here we have the first row here, the AAD, DV2, G, and AV2. These are SKUs that we had more than a year ago. In the last year, we've launched these bottom six SKUs. So in the last year, we've launched the F series, we've launched two GPU SKUs, we've launched the H series, we've launched the L series, which is a large SSD-based SKU, and a bunch of SAP large instances. And the NC SKU and the H SKU both have InfiniBand connectivity for very, very high throughput and very low latency connection between those running instances. Well, I'm excited to tell you a little bit about two additional sets of SKUs, one which we've announced actually today at the NVIDIA conference down south, the ND and the NCV2. The ND, which is our GPU SKU, but for deep learning, that's the D, very clever naming, is going to be built on P40s. So these are a generation of SKU from NVIDIA geared towards deep learning, geared towards being able to do scale-out computation as part of that, and that's why also it will have InfiniBand connectivity supported as well. And then the NCV2, the P100, a computational SKU, a SKU focused on scale-out compute also with InfiniBand connectivity. And then the two additional ones, DV3 and EV3, these are just generational SKUs. These are the next generation of these SKUs. But the exciting thing that I actually want to show you is these will have support for nested virtualization. So because these SKUs are launching on top of Server 2016, we can now support tiering of Hyper-V on top of them in a fully supported way, which means you can now do VMs inside a VM and be able to deploy that type of service and solution on top of these sizes. And so when you look at the capabilities that are added across these four, very excited to be able to talk about the two NVIDIA-based SKUs, Tesla P40 and Tesla P100. Then the DV3 and the EV3 all coming here this year. The DV3, EV3, actually in the next few months, you'll see those go live. So very, very exciting. And with that, I wanted to just spend a minute. Actually, if you want to sign up for the GPU preview, you can sign up for that. It's GPU preview, NDNC. Very clever. Those are the two sizes. And go ahead and sign up, and you can get early access to that as soon as it's available. So one thing I want to just touch on, I mentioned nested virtualization. I think this is so cool, especially if you're an infrastructure person, the ability to take the machines that we've got running and actually layer on top of them additional virtual machines. So if you look at our lowest level here, our hardware level, and you add on top of that the hypervisor that we're running, which is actually running on top of Server 2016. So it's the stock hypervisor in Server 2016. And we then add a vCPU, and that's how we expose, or a set of vCPUs. That's how we expose the VM you get. So now with these capabilities, you can now run a VM on top of that. So you can now put a guest VM inside the VM that we gave you in the cloud, all fully supported using Hyper-V. But what's cool about this is it doesn't have to be just one. You can now actually spread out and really take advantage of the full power of the instance that you're running on and run a Windows guest, a Linux guest. You can even run Hyper-V containers using Hyper-V isolation. So this capability, this power is so cool because you really can squeeze out every little inch of that machine you're running. And again, that efficiency, that agility becomes really paramount here. And just to sort of prove to you that this is a reality, I actually have one of these machines up right now. And so let me actually log into this guy, and I'm going to show you what this looks like. Okay, and so I've got this machine running, and I'm going to log in. And so one of the things you'll see right away is sort of the breakdown of the machine. And so here is the running machine. Let's see. Let's get it up here running. And, of course, you can see here's the Hyper-V pane, right? And so you can see, and let me just actually show you. So here's the running machine, the memory, the CPU. And we've got this broken down here quite a few. It's a large machine, right? So it's good that I can subdivide this sucker into smaller machines, okay? And so let me actually go in here and show you what this looks like. Let's see. There we go. Okay, great. Oh, I went too far. All right. So let me pull that back up here. Okay. So I've got two virtual machines running inside this virtual machine. One is an Ubuntu machine. And so that one's up and running, and you can see, let's see here, it's it is running some sort of job that I've got running here. I'm doing some calculations, which always you should be doing in virtual machines. And then I've got a Windows Server 2016 machine also running here. And so let me open that one up. And inside this one, you see there's another virtual machine. So now I am truly inception-ing this. And so this is running a lot slower than everything behind it. Anyway, Inception's a great movie, right? So now I can actually start this up, and then I can get this machine running inside this machine, and actually you can go further and further, so on and so on. I'm not going to do that, but you can sort of imagine the power that this enables by offering this type of nested capability. And again, with containers, you can do that with the Hyper-V containers as well, and enable that level of isolation so that you can take advantage of that container-based deployment as part of those virtual machines as well. All right. So you all saw the Azure Cloud Shell this morning. That was super cool, right? Really exciting announcement. I love it, but I'll tell you one thing. I actually am a big PowerShell guy too, And what we didn't show this morning, which now I'm going to show you, is actually the PowerShell version of this. So this is not yet available. The one that we're showing with Bash is available. But there's also a PowerShell version that offers the same capabilities, but again, with a fully integrated PowerShell experience. Key things with the Cloud Shell, this is free. This is fast. It's amazing how quickly you can get on there. You can use the platform, really, really easy. Bash you saw this morning, so you can do that Linux container, and it spins that up. Or you can spin up, coming soon, the Windows side of the house, and you'll get a PowerShell container. And so I'm actually going to show you that right now. Okay. And so I have this up and running. It's sort of the same experience, but you can see sort of the PowerShell blue, which is nice here. And so, you know, just to kind of get started here, I've got this up and running. Oh, here we go. And so just to get, you know, get date, really, these are really complex PowerShell commands. And so I can also do, you know, basically PowerShell commands that are specific to Azure. And so this is calling it from my account. I didn't sign into my account. I didn't configure it. It's automatically configured as part of this login experience. Now, here's what's super, super cool, though. What we've done with PowerShell is we've actually built namespace integration. So I'm running here. I can hit dir, okay? Great. It's acquiring data. This is my list of subscriptions that I have access to inside Azure. So this is actually my list of subscriptions given to me as file format. So now I can go in here and let's say Cori application. I can do tab complete from there. Now I can hit dir from there, and it's going to show me all my resource groups. So now I hit dir, and I get the list of resource groups that are deployed as part of that subscription. And so here's the resource groups I've got. Let's go in and take a look at, let's see here, which one? Let's go into Linux VM IMDS. I can go in here. It's going to tell me, look, there's compute and networking in here. So I can actually go inside compute, take a dir there, and I can go into virtual machines. And so just to be crystal clear on what I'm looking at, this is the resource groups that are in my account that now I'm able to peruse as if they are a file format using the built-in shell in the portal. It's unbelievable how much easier this will be to manage your resources instead of having to deal with understanding sort of all the layout of all the structure. You just go in and you find it. You can call commands. You can delete all this available right here. So super cool. PowerShell support on its way out the door here, and we'll have that soon. All right. Is that cool? What do we think? Is that PowerShell thing going to be cool? Okay, thank you. Thank you. For those who are watching on the live stream, the entire room stood up applauding. Just great. There was applause. I'm not lying. All right. Great. You can sign up for this preview using this PS Cloud sign up. So a lot of these things are new. A lot of these things we are basically taking people in as we go. And so that's kind of the point of what I wanted to walk through with you guys today. All right. So a few more things with infrastructure, and then we'll move on to containers. So Scott mentioned this. 38 announced regions. Fantastic. One of the things that's really cool, though, about the regions that we've deployed in and how we've deployed is that we have a bunch of countries that have multiple regions in them. This is very important for a lot of scenarios, for any sort of compliance boundary scenarios, making sure data doesn't leave a country. It's a very common requirement. And so we offer up to 9 countries where disaster recovery is possible because of multiple regions. Now, you may be saying to yourself, okay, great, but man, this is tough, right? It's hard to do disaster recovery for infrastructure or platform services. You know, how do I manage that? How do I set that up? Well, I'm glad you asked. So, disaster recovery availability has a bunch of options. So you saw a little bit with Cosmos DB this morning. You can configure that to replicate multiple regions for disaster recovery. Really easy to use and configure. You can do the same thing with SQL, MySQL, and Postgres. And with blob storage with GRS, you can also take advantage of this replication across regions. So you've got these PaaS data services. And then on the VM side, to complement the capabilities that we're offering across these data services, we are very excited to announce coming soon the ability to do cross-region site recovery. And so what this will enable you to do is configure as part of a VM automatic disaster recovery to another region in the world. So you can go in, you can say, look, I'm running in East US, I want to make sure I do disaster recovery to North Central. You can configure it. You can try testing it. It's using the same capabilities that we've enabled for on-prem to Azure disaster recovery, but now it's Azure to Azure. And so you can take advantage of those multiple regions that we have in countries and be able to build out a disaster recovery solution that combines the VMs with the platform services. I mean, this is really, really cool. It is coming soon. We're pretty excited about this offering. I think it's going to change a lot of the difficulties around building disaster recovery solutions. And so what this means is running infrastructure in Azure is really, really fun. That is true. Because of this high availability options that you have across these different tiers. You have in-country disaster recovery at 9 countries. Our multi-instance SLA is 395. And we have a single-instance SLA. And this is something that you may not have been aware of. We actually do offer a single-instance SLA of 39s. And when you look at some of the other guys out there, typically it's actually only one country for that in-country DR. And single-instance SLA is typically missing. And so this is something we feel pretty excited about offering a unique story when it comes to availability comparisons with many of the other clouds out there. Okay. Now, what you may be saying is, okay, so you've got this availability story. How am I able to track the availability of my instances? And how am I able to detect with inside my virtual machines what the state of them is and how well they're running? Well, I am also excited to announce the launch of our instance metadata service. So this is a new service that's exposed inside the virtual machine. So inside the virtual machine, you can effectively get access to an endpoint, which is always 169.254.169.254. I'm expecting you to remember that. We will not publish that. This will be the only place we say that. No. That endpoint is the REST endpoint, and it exposes a bunch of information to each individual VM. So now you can write your code to take advantage of this REST endpoint. You can see context of what's running. You can see the identity of the instance, so you can bootstrap identity for that virtual machine, verify that it is what you say it is, and you can manage any sort of maintenance events that may be upcoming. So if you go into the portal or someone goes into the portal and hits reboot, you will see this pop up, just like actually this is a real command that popped up. You will see it pop up, and it will say, whoa, someone issued a reboot command, and you will have a chance to do something about it inside the virtual machine in a fully programmatic way. So this is really cool. It allows you to sort of interact with the platform to make sure that the right operations are happening against your instances. You can protect them from being abused in this way sometimes. And it allows you to get access and status of all the instances running. And so that's going to be a really, really powerful addition to the platform. Okay. So that is the core infrastructure. That is the core part of the infrastructure. And I want to move on now to containers. So containers are exciting. They've seen quite a bit of growth in usage over the last couple years. We're pretty excited. You saw a lot this morning around the container support we have in Azure. Pretty excited about the opportunities in the core part of the platform and with partners as part of our container solution. So our Azure Container Service offers capabilities to deploy Kubernetes, DCOS, and Swarm. And so across each of these, the container service spins up a set of infrastructure for you, deploys the application model on it, and opens up an endpoint for you to be able to go manage and configure and deploy your containers accordingly. And the nice thing about this is intended to be pretty well managed, right? You go in and you configure it, and it takes care of the infrastructure, and you're mostly just dealing with the top-level API surface area using those CLIs, those control sets that you want to go use. And so this has been great. We've had this out for a little while. But the big addition that we've recently made to this is we've actually brought in a new team. We basically deployed this and we said, yep, we like Kubernetes, but man, I wish we were smarter when it came to Kubernetes. And so we said, hey, Deis, you guys are super smart. Why don't you guys come and work with us on this? And so we are welcoming the Deis team to Azure. And the capabilities and services that they brought to bear have been a really big help, a really big support for our overall Kubernetes capabilities in the platform. And one great example of this is a platform called Helm. And if you haven't played with Helm, one of the things that it's just really, really good at, it's basically a package manager for Kubernetes. And so you can go in and you can easily install things using Helm onto a Kubernetes cluster that you deployed as part of the Azure Container Service. So let me actually show you what that looks like here on my Mac. And so what we offer here with Helm is, again, the ability to do package management deployment, find a set of community-built capabilities, and launch them onto your Kubernetes cluster. It's all open source, 100%, so you can go in, you can play around, you can make changes, and it really helps you manage the deployments and find the right services that you want for your deployment. So let me actually start by just kind of making sure I'm actually running something here. And so let me do kind of the cluster info command. And so, oh, that's hard to see, isn't it? Let me zoom in here and recall it here. Okay, great. A little bit easier. So here I am running a Kubernetes cluster here using ACS in Azure. Okay, and I spun this up using sort of the normal ACS commands. And so it is running, I believe, 3 nodes here. So let's see here. Three agents and one master, so 4 nodes technically, and it's ready to take traffic here. And let's see, it's got a set of things deployed, set of applications deployed, containers deployed. Great, and so it does have a few things there, but it looks like it's ready to take more of my deployments. So let me actually go ahead and take a look at what options I have. So Helm, here I've copied this down, and so you can see I do Helm search, and this is what it offers me. A long list of different solutions, different tools that are available for me to just install. And it's using a capability called charts that allow you to define what goes into one of these installations, what containers need to be deployed, and the configuration and setup, the ports that need to be open, et cetera. I mean, so you can see here just quite a lot of options here. Examples like Drupal and Ghost, solutions like RabbitMQ or Redis, right? All of these right here at my fingertips, ready to install. And so let me actually try one. And so let me do stable here, and I'm going to do WordPress. Okay. Okay. And so what did I do? What's that? Oh, well, no, that should be okay. I don't know what's. Oh, maybe that's it. Ha! Thank you, sir, in the front. 2 dashes. My bad. Yes, so this installed, right? So this pulled this down, it grabbed the container, it deployed the chart, and away I go, and it's basically loading this now, right? And it's going to load this, and it's going to tell me how to access it, and so all of this is built into the chart that explains how to do it. Away I go here on this, and I can basically see now that deployment, and the Helm toolset should have deployed that. And just to give you a sense, I've actually ahead of time prepared one just to kind of show you, but if you see here what I've got, the WordPress here. So I've got one that I've deployed, this exact command here. And I can go here and just show you that. Oh, look, it's there you go. And so this is basically all done, right? So that simple, one command, pulls it down, configures it for me, launches it on Kubernetes, and away I go. Super cool. And so this is all, again, available inside GitHub. So you can go see this whole list of solutions, of the charts that are available. They're all here listed out. Super, super cool. And then on top of that, with Kube Apps, you can actually find a Bitnami-hosted site that lists a set of charts that can be installed as part of Helm, right? And so you can see just this massive amount of community, more than 145 people contributing to these charts to make these deployments work great. And that's all, of course, using Helm, thanks to Deus. And it's been great to actually have them join the container team and really, really lead our thinking forward on this. So this has been great. All right, let me go back here. Okay. Awesome. And so, whoops, just kidding. I'm going to show more PowerShell. So, in addition to supporting the Azure Container Service as part of our deployments, we also have a lot of great support with partners. And so this is something that we've seen a lot of excitement around, seen a lot of energy around, capabilities like Docker Enterprise Edition. And so what we've seen with Docker Enterprise Edition for customers deploying, it's really a great opportunity for the certified Docker tool chain to be used. So for those customers who are very passionate about using that Docker tool chain and making sure it's fully certified end-to-end, Docker Enterprise has been very popular, offering sort of that secure software supply chain. And so it offers that certification at the infrastructure, at the container, and at the application level. And so this has been great, great support inside Azure to be able to run this and manage containers in that way as well. And so these options offer a lot of choice for you to decide exactly how and where you want to deploy. Okay. So moving forward to the application side of the house. So when we talk about application, we're really focused about building this without dealing with infrastructure. It's about being able to deploy a great solution without any of that underneath muckety-muck. And so let me start a little bit on what this offers. So when you look at infrastructure and you look at containers, this is, again, really about efficiency and agility. As you move up the stack to PaaS, it's really about innovation. How do you get your solution to customers much, much faster? How do you get it to customers in such a way that they can easily use it and manage it? And so you heard a little bit this morning about Azure Service Fabric. And what we've done with Azure Service Fabric is it's a platform that we built internally to run a lot of the services that we run, Cosmos DB, SQL DB, et cetera. And we've released it as part of an external service offering both stateful and stateless microservices. So some of the recent support that we've added has included Compose support. So you can actually run a Docker Compose solution in Service Fabric, which gives a lot of portability. You can take that and you can run it somewhere else as well, which is great. It's got .NET and Java support. And what's really cool, and we're seeing a lot of usage on this, is deploying it on-premises as well as Azure. So you can deploy it in Azure. We'll help manage the infrastructure. But you can also deploy it on-premises. You can deploy it in Azure Stack. You can deploy in VMware, OpenStack, AWS even. But I think you want to do the other ones. And so you can deploy this anywhere. This is great, right? This portability is nice. It makes it really simple to be able to use. And some additional support. Well, so we are announcing, of course, the GA support for Windows Server containers. And that is available as of today. We also are announcing the preview support for Compose, which I'll show you here in a minute. We also have Hyper-V isolation support. So this is Hyper-V containers can now be run as part of Service Fabric as well, and a direct Azure endpoint to deploy solutions using Service Fabric. So let me actually show you a little bit of this Compose support that I've been talking about and what it actually means. Okay. So here, I actually have a Service Fabric cluster running. It's one that I've set up already. And so you can see it running here. I've got 10 nodes set aside for this. Okay. And so what I'm going to do, I actually have a little script that I'm going to run that's going to actually launch the application. So it's going to actually deploy. And then I'm going to go to Visual Studio and show you what this is doing. Let's let that go here. Okay, great. So let me go over to Visual Studio and show you a little bit of what I'm doing. So this is your classic music store application, .NET application. Let's get this over here, this mouse I'm getting. There we go. .NET application, and you can see sort of your standard .NET solution. And we've got two different deployment options here. So we've got one using the typical Service Fabric-based model. And so let me actually zoom in here and kind of show you. So, but it's using containers. So it's the Service Fabric model using containers. So this is, you know, what you probably know and love, you know, very clear sort of XML-based solution. And so you can see here, that's not what I wanted to do. Excuse me. You can actually see here the container host listed. And so this is actually pulling from Docker Hub to be able to pull down that solution and launch SQL Server. You can basically deploy that, manage that, it's any opening up an endpoint, and so on. So that's kind of your standard Service Fabric model. And what we also have here, though, is a similar model, but actually using Docker Compose. And so you see very similar things here. If you actually zoom in here, you can see the image here, SQL Server image. You can see sort of the, you guys all getting sick now? You can see here this mouse is a little bit more sensitive than I thought. And you can see here, another endpoint, the web part of the endpoint. And so you can see this compose file. It's using YAML, right? And it actually lists out all the containers that are being exposed as part of this application. And it's pulling them down as part of it, listing them out, and configuring them, right? And so as part of that, as part of this script, I've launched the app twice. I've launched the app to be able to expose both the endpoint that is now running using the Service Fabric side and the endpoint that's running the Compose side of the house. And so let me actually zoom back out. And so let me go back over and see kind of how that deployment's going. So you can see the deployment's going. You can see applications that are launched here, the service that's running here. Let's actually pull this up here and see. So two applications. So you can see one is running the Music Store based on the Service Fabric app, and Run is running the Music Store app itself. And so let's see here where that endpoint is here. And so let me actually open up a new window here and see. See where this guy is. Oops. And so the endpoint, I have run this a few times. So Music Store running, port 80 is actually running the Service Fabric version of this. And you can probably guess the other one looks incredibly different. No, it doesn't. It looks exactly the same. Port 8080, it looks exactly the same. And so the whole idea here is these are pulling the same containers. It's really just a deployment model that's different. But the nice thing is this composed deployment model, you can pick this up and run it somewhere else. I showed you Docker Enterprise. You can deploy it there. Right? You can deploy it on Kubernetes. Right? This gives you that flexibility to move things around if you want to. And that's really the benefit that comes with using that type of model. Okay. Oh. Look at that. Let the record show that, again, a rip-roaring applause. Okay. All right, let me move forward. So a couple of additional partner solutions worth calling out here. One is Red Hat OpenShift. So in a similar fashion to Service Fabric in offering container-based application models, with Red Hat OpenShift, in some ways, it's sort of an enterprise Kubernetes. It offers policy management. It offers content trust. And of course, with sort of all the promise that Red Hat has frequently given when it comes to Linux-based support, it now offers this as part of the Kubernetes story. And so it offers sort of that enterprise focus. And again, hybrid and multi-cloud, giving you the ability to run in multiple locations. Runs great in Azure. We've got a lot of customers who are excited about using this on top of Azure infrastructure. In a similar fashion, Pivotal Cloud Foundry as well. In Pivotal Cloud Foundry, we've seen a lot of Java-based solutions. It also has .NET support. We've seen folks like Ford, GE, Manulife deploy this. And again, these are platform solutions running on top of the infrastructure. And so with Pivotal, of course, you can actually connect with other services in Azure in a very, very easy way. So you can connect with things like SQLDB and be able to take advantage of that as part of your application model. So this is very, very powerful, very cool stuff to be able to deploy this on top of our infrastructure, offering a great sort of overall PaaS story. And so when you look at this overall story that we offer, we offer a lot of things with containers, don't we? A lot of choices here. And you may be saying, hey, Corey, when should I use what? I don't have a clue. You tell me. No, just kidding. What I tell you is this. It's actually a pretty complex question. The biggest reason why this flexibility is so powerful is that it lets you choose. If you've got a preconceived notion, if you've got a platform that you're excited about, we can run it. Right? And especially with the portability that we've now offered as part of this, you can take these application models and move them around. You can move them between environments and start playing around. Now, what we've seen across the stack here is a lot of affinitization based on the type of application model people are building. So on the Service Fabric side, we've seen a lot of affinity towards Windows.NET-based solutions. On the Kubernetes side, a little bit more on the Linux side of the house and deployments there, a little bit more the dev-focused side of the house on the Kubernetes side. DCOS has been a little bit more data-focused when it comes to its deployment. We've seen deployments from its universe to be able to launch database services in a very, very easy way. Cloud Foundry, again, like I mentioned, very Java-focused. Of course, it has that .NET capability too, but we've seen a huge amount of Java usage. OpenShift, that enterprise Kubernetes, very exciting. And then, of course, Docker offering that certified Docker toolchain. And so, you know, based on sort of what you value, what's critical, what that app looks like that day, you will then be able to decide exactly how you want to use this and which platforms you want to use. Okay. So, when I move on to other platform offerings in compute, Azure Batch is one that we've seen a lot of excitement. We've seen a lot of growth on Azure Batch, and it's been a really fun platform to see what people can do with this. So Azure Batch offers job scheduling as a service. You can go in, whether Windows or Linux, you submit a job, and we'll take care of it for you. We'll spin up the virtual machines, we'll launch them onto those virtual machines, we'll scale as you need. Jobs fail, we'll restart them. A lot of those platform offerings become very, very easy with the Azure Batch service. And so what's great about the Azure Batch service is that it offers these capabilities to allow you to focus on cost. It allows you to focus on how you want to get things done, when you want to get things done, how much scale you want, how much infrastructure you want. But there's one thing that Azure Batch hasn't yet enabled, which is the ability to decide that you're actually okay if midway through the job or midway through an instance, maybe it gets stopped or evicted. So what I'm excited to announce today is the launch of Low Priority Batch. So what Low Priority Batch does is it places it on infrastructure that we may need to take back. There's a lot of infrastructure in our platform that we reserve for other uses, that we reserve perhaps for other customers to grow. And we're kind of wasting it right now. With low priority batch VMs, you can start using that. We may throw you out if we need it back, but you pay a lot less to use it. So with low priority batch VMs, you pay up to 80% discount. That's not 80% of the price, that's 80% discount. So that is a huge, huge cost savings for you to be able to run these types of jobs. And of course, it's deeply integrated with batch scheduling. So when a job dies or we evict you, it will automatically restart you on other infrastructure. So really, you don't know or care about eviction other than the fact that it may slow down the completion time of your job. And so if your job's like, look, I don't care, as long as it finishes in the next couple weeks, we'll be fine. You can take advantage of this and pay an extremely, extremely low price to be able to do your jobs. And so this is exciting. This is launching into preview. It's something that we're pretty passionate about being able to take advantage of. Another aspect of Batch that we've seen a lot of energy around is being able to take advantage of the rendering capabilities of Batch. One of the things that we've seen is people come in and they want to use the compute to be able to build pictures or build backgrounds or be able to get 3D models. All of these things have become so exciting and so popular that I'm really quite honored to be able to bring up on stage a new partner that we are launching as part of the Azure Batch service and solution. So I'd like to have TJ Galda come up and join me on stage to talk a little bit about Autodesk and Azure Batch coming together. Yeah, you got plenty of time. Take it, yeah. Oh.
right? How cool is that, hey?
Yeah.
So we at Autodesk, we're privileged. We get to work with the best and the brightest in film, you know, your favorite television shows, all the way to the biggest games, right? And I'm actually got a lucky job. I'm in charge of the digital content creation, so I get to travel to all over to Japan, to Europe, to even here. We were here a couple weeks ago seeing some really big game companies. And everywhere I go, people tell me we've got a problem. Yeah. Oh, sorry. HR would say we've got a challenge, right? The challenge is actually here. It's in this room. Yeah. It's all of us, right? Because we keep asking for more. We want bigger images, more monsters, more effects, HDR, UHD, 4K, stereo. It just keeps going. The bar keeps going up and up and up. Right? And so the studios that we deal with have to deal with that in a sense that now, as we just mentioned with Corey, that they're rendering these images or creating the pictures that you see, and the bar just keeps going up and up and up. Right? So it's quite a challenge, right? Because one of the common things that whether you're working on a feature film or your favorite television show is that you're doing what we call rendering, right? Making the images that you see from your 3D scenes or your models, et cetera, right? And so what a studio's done for solution-wise up until now, they've sort of said, okay, well, we'll take a server farm, but we'll be sneaky. We'll call it a render farm. We'll put it in an air-conditioned box, right? Very special room. We'll have a full-time staff that'll feed and care for these machines so they don't crash. Right? And that, now you start talking about, you know, tens or hundreds of thousands, sometimes even millions of dollars to have these render farms running, right? Because the last thing you want as a studio is your artist to walk in, they walk up, they hit render, okay, I'll see you Friday. You can't have that, right? Because today, with the bar going up, the images to render sometimes can be, you know, minutes to hours. It's even common to see some frames take literally days to render one picture, right? Some of the biggest films that you've seen, that's a case, right? So with the render farms, that problem goes away, right? But now you start dealing with cost, right? And at some point, you get to a point where you just can't buy any more machines, right? And so how do we flip to slides here? Here we go. Perfect. So that was challenge number one, right? Challenge number two is that artists, you know, any good artist wants to noodle, right? They want to iterate on stuff. So they do their animation, and then they want to try it again. So you just saw him do the animation. So now the jungle's ready. We'll bring in the background, right? We'll look at it again. Maybe we'll try a camera move. We'll take a look, see how we like it. And you're like, eh, it's okay. It's not bad. Maybe I don't like that camera move. We'll try it again, right? And so we start doing all these iterations. So now in this case, the jungle's ready. The textures are there. The lights are done. So we'll do it one more time. And we'll take a look at it. Walking too far from the clicker. Here we go. And to take a look, and you're like, oh, okay, I like that, but I just want to change a few more things. Maybe I'll change it. Time's up. Deadline. No more changes. You know, and every one of us, all the artists in the room, are like, well, but he didn't have hair on his head. Like, there's stuff to change there. And so that's challenge number two, right? So now, what I'm excited to talk about is that with our software and what we can do with Azure Batch, we're able to start allowing us to have some solutions for that, right? So what's super cool and I'm excited to talk about is that Autodesk Academy Award-winning software, Maya, 3ds Max, and our latest Academy Award-winning software, our renderer, Arnold, are all teaming up and working and joining forces with Azure to solve that problem, right? So if you can push a button, those problems go away. Because you can go on and you can render to your heart's content, right? So if you want to, you know, you're starting out and you don't have, you know, you show up and, you know, I'm actually well-dressed today, but normally I'm in a, you know, a greasy T-shirt. You go to the bank. The bank's not going to give you $1 million to build a render farm in a T-shirt, right? But now I can just push a button and that problem goes away, right? The other cool thing is, what if you're a studio or has a render farm? I already spent that time. But the deadline that we just talked about, you just hit that. Well, now you can burst the cloud. You can ramp up at whim and hit those deadlines and make sure that you just noodle a little bit more and get just what you want. So it's pretty darn cool. We're super excited about it. What we're going to do is actually we'll spend a bunch of time tomorrow at 2:30. We'll go through how this all works. So if you're interested, we're happy to talk with you. We definitely want to hear from people, and we're quite excited, not just for the fact that this is ready to go, but we're also excited to see what you'll do with it, right? Because you know, frankly, we're all fans, right? So I know I'll be watching what the customers will be able to put in the next film. And frankly, we'll all be watching. So thanks. Good job, man.
Thanks, TJ. That was that's awesome. Super cool. And again, really excited to be able to announce the Azure Batch Rendering Service. And again, please go to this site. You can register, take advantage of this. This is going to be a really fun one. Okay. So moving up higher in the stack and talking a little bit more about some of the higher level platform offerings. One of the things that we actually announced very recently, and it's worth talking about, is web app support for Linux containers. And so this is really exciting. If you've used web apps and you use app service, you'll know that it's a very, very easy to use, quick to get started support for building out web-based solutions. It's got slots for you to be able to do easy swapping. It's got autoscale built in, and you can even do testing in production with this. So this is fantastic. And layer on now that you can actually deploy containers in this environment. So you can do all those amazing things that web apps brings. It has no infrastructure management. You have very easy testing and production, auto scale. You can do all the slot swapping that you want to do to your heart's content, but using that container solution with pre-built containers to deploy. And so it really brings that power of containers to this higher level platform offering. And we've seen some really exciting stuff. And of course, you can even direct SSH into those containers and go and manage them if you want to. But you know, typically you wouldn't want to, but you can. I'm not gonna tell you what to do. Okay. Now, going one step higher in the PaaS story is the function side of the house, which is serverless. And so if you look at this picture of the efficiency model, and then you add the innovation layer with PaaS, and then you kind of stick serverless up there in the upper right. It's the ability to do an event-based programming model without any infrastructure and with billing exactly by demand, by usage, by code. And so our offering here is Azure Functions. And so with Azure Functions, you can end up doing this code with events, bring them together, and you've got Azure Functions. You trigger on events, and you have a connection with external services, so you can connect this with incoming events from places like data stores. So if someone drops something in Azure Storage, it will launch an event. You pay only per execution. And it's got built-in support for C# and Node.js. And we just announced today the integration with Visual Studio. So now you can go in Visual Studio and do editing and modifying of Azure Functions directly inside as part of that. Now, one of the really cool parts of the Azure Functions support that we announced just this week is the Azure Functions runtime. So what the Azure Functions runtime is this ability to install and run Azure Functions on containers outside of the Azure environment. And so that was a reference this morning as part of the keynote. It basically supports the exact same functions programming model that you're writing against in public Azure, that you're coding against perhaps now in Visual Studio. But it now runs it on top of Azure Stack, let's say. It can run it as part of a container anywhere that containers can run. And so it allows you to take your functions code and literally run it anywhere that containers can run. Yeah. And the same portal experience is available in each one of those locations. So this is a really exciting offering. This is something that we are announcing this week. And you can play around or get access to this by going to this location, this aka.msazafr location. Okay. So the very last thing that I want to talk about is a slightly different service, a different announcement that I want to make. And it's mostly focused on the Azure Resource Manager and what we now can do with this and what you can now do with this to be able to build applications and solutions. And so I would like to announce the Azure Managed Applications and Service Catalog. So what this is that we're announcing is the ability to effectively package and seal applications for other folks to use. Applications that you build that maybe you want to manage, but then other folks, maybe in your organization, in your enterprise, they will deploy. So let me kind of give you an example of what that means. So this is me, and I picked this because I was told I was not allowed to put any copyrighted information, so I just picked a picture. The joke's on them. I took that from the web. But I'm live streaming, so they can't take it back. And so this is me, and I'm, let's say, an idiot, right? I don't know what I'm doing. I work in, you guys all know someone in your company that's like this, like me. Don't know what I'm doing, but I'd like an app, right? And I know I want this TPS report app that I'd like to go deploy, but I don't quite get it. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm going to go muck with it and ruin it, and you know that you're going to have to support me. It's super annoying. Okay. And so this is all building on top of our Azure Resource Manager capabilities. And gosh, we've seen so much growth in this area. Azure Resource Manager, we've got more than 175 templates being deployed per second to Azure. It's just a huge amount of usage. And because this is a grouping of an application, we can now create a new environment and a new model for applications to be built. So I come in and say, I want this TPS app. It is a sealed app. It consists of a bunch of services, three VMs that get deployed, Cosmos DB, SQL DB, whatever. I don't really know or care. I deploy, and it is then managed by this owning developer. So this owning developer can see that I've deployed this and can go in and manage those VMs inside my account. Actually, and I can't. It is sealed from me taking access against them. And so the developer can now basically run it in addition to creating that app as part of it. And so let me actually show you what this looks like. And so the key thing here is, as part of this, you can deploy this as either a shared application. You can actually sell this application. It is incredibly simple to deploy. And again, the turnkey aspect is really the important point. I hit go, I get my app, and the whole thing is built out for me using, again, that resource manager experience. And so let me actually show you this. Okay. So I've got this up and running, and this is a set of applications that have been exposed to me. Again, the guy who doesn't really know what I'm doing, okay? And so it's a bunch of managed apps, and so you can see here, here's one that looks interesting. Ryan's amazing TPS report managed app. So this was made by Ryan on my team, and it exposes this solution, this application that I want, and it's been approved by my IT department. And so the developers in my IT department have approved this, and I have access to it. So I can go hit create on this. And this user experience here, this is completely configurable as part of the application. So I can take whatever parameters you decide need to be configured to deploy this application. So you actually define what the UX looks like that's exposed in the portal. So if I go hit Corey. Okay. Oop. Did I get it right? This one's wrong. All right. Passwords are not my friend. All right. TPS. And then let's go to the region that we are planning to deploy this in. Okay. Hit OK. Uh-oh. Hit OK. And now this is, again, configured this options of exactly the UX that I want. So hit, see if that's taken. Hopefully not. All right, cool. And then it should run validation, make sure everything I've got here is good. Oh. Well, it looks like something's not allowed here. It was allowed this morning, though, so something's changed. But anyway, luckily, I happen to have one up and running, ready to show you. So you can see here on the left, manage applications. I've got one available here. And so here are the ones that are running in my account. And so I've got a set that are running in my account. So let me zoom in so you can see this here. And so I've got, you know, a set of solutions, applications built. The TPS report one is already pre-deployed. The Ubuntu app, I've got a Windows Server app. And so these are all pre-deployed in my account. So I can click on this. And so here's the fun part. I can see this application, right? So this application has been built. I can see the parameters that I passed in. Okay. And so let me actually go into that resource group. And so here it is deployed. And let me go in and say, you know what? I know this better than you guys. So I'm going to go in and actually say, I don't think I need this VM anymore since I understand applications better. Oops, that's not what I wanted to do. I wanted to hit the VM deletion. Let me actually go in here and say, let's delete this VM. Okay. And so, yes, I know what I'm doing. Oh, it blocks me. So it actually tells me, you can't do this. You are not the owner of this account. So the owning developer, one of you guys, would be actually the one who's managing this for the enterprise, for your friends like me, stick figure friends who don't know what they're doing. You can now manage this on their behalf and make sure that you're basically protected against stupid people doing stupid things like me. All right. And so, you know, with that capability, you can now expose these applications as part of your enterprise. Now, what's really cool about this, you can either say, great, expose these apps as part of my enterprise, and also expose the rest of Azure, that's fine. Or you can say, these are the only things people like stick figures like me can deploy. And so you can say, only supported are these managed apps that you've created for your company, for your enterprise, for your partners, and nothing else can be deployed as part of that Azure account. And so it allows you to really control, lock down who can do what inside your environments. And so really powerful capability, and this is something available preview today, so this is something we're launching right now and making available for you guys to start building again. So we'll definitely want to see what you can build and what you can show off there. So with that, we talked about a lot of things today. I talked very fast to get through all of the announcements. A set of new virtual machines, GPU machines, the new nested virtualization support. We talked a little bit about capabilities to be able to manage access and health of your instances using the IMDS or the metadata service. We talked a little bit about the addition of Deis and what that support with things like Helm can bring us. We also talked about the Compose support for Service Fabric, being able to deploy that as part of a Service Fabric environment and launch on other platforms. We talked about partnerships with OpenShift. We talked about partnerships with Pivotal and partnerships with Docker Enterprise. We then ended with, focus on platform. This included solutions like Linux containers with web apps. It included solutions like Azure Functions running anywhere. And of course, the awesome Azure Rendering Service with TJ coming up and talking a little bit about Autodesk. And so the combination of these things, we're pretty excited about being able to enable you a full spectrum of application model, whether it be down at the infrastructure with VMs that we're constantly updating and changing, new ones coming all the time, containers for fast infrastructure deployments, very, very agile solutions, and then platform without having to deal with any of that top-level, bottom-level infrastructure or management. And across all these, we're pretty excited about what we've announced this week and announced today, and I hope you guys will go give it a try. Make sure you give us feedback on this stuff and give us feedback on this session. And with that, I hope all of you have a really, really wonderful build. So thank you very much.